Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Tim Porter. I'm one of the pastors for Faith Community Church, and it is good to be in the room with you all here this morning. Online, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for the privilege of your time here this morning as we gather together. Now, some of you may remember this last Thursday, as a nation, we celebrated Veterans Day. And the Bible teaches us to pay honor and to give honor to whom honor is due. And so we want to take a few moments here this morning to honor our veterans and those who are serving and those who love those who are serving right now. And we want to honor and pray for you. And so if you are a veteran, would you please, if you're in the room, would you please just stand right now and then stay standing? Would you please do that right now? Any veterans in the room? Those who have served? Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, stay standing, stay standing, stay standing if you would, please. And then if there's anybody in the room who's serving right now, or has a loved one that's serving right now, would you please stand? We want to pray, honor and pray for you as well. All right, would you do that? Great, thank you. Awesome, thank you. Good. Good, yeah, thank you. Thank you as well. It's a phrase that has become common right now, but it's a very important phrase, and that is, we know that freedom is not free. We just want to thank you so much for your sacrifice. We want to give you honor, and we want to pray for you. And so please stay standing. I know you don't like it, but add attention as well, if you would, please. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to. I just want to pray for you all as we continue, Father. Please join me in praying. Father, thank you so much for your grace and your goodness. Thank you so much that you've placed it in the human heart and in these people, the willingness to put themselves in harm's way for us. Thank you. Thank you for those who are serving right now that are part of our body and loved ones who are part of our body and who have loved ones who are back here. We know that there is sacrifice. We can't imagine the sacrifice, though. And God, I ask that you would grant healing to hearts for any trauma that's been experienced here in this room. I ask for healing of hearts. I ask, God, for protection for those who are serving right now. We ask for a joyous reunion soon as well. Thank you, God, for your mercy, your kindness, your goodness. Thank you. Amen. Again, thank you, everyone. Thanks for standing and thanks for clapping. Yeah, thank you so much. So much. So we are in a series called The Last Enemy, and we're talking about death, and I'm going to talk a little bit about death today. But we're also going to talk about hope and victory this morning. Now, I grew up in the church, and I grew up hearing many, many times, trust Jesus, follow Jesus, give your life to Jesus, and when you die, you will go to heaven. Very powerful message of the Bible, that when we die, if we are trusting in Jesus, we belong to him. When we die, we will die and go to be with him in heaven. Now, though, when I got into my 20s, I started to read the Bible a little bit more, and you know, this is just the reality. I'm a little bit thick sometimes. I started to read this word resurrection. I'm like, hang on, resurrection. I had heard over and over again, truth, that to die in Jesus, to die with Jesus, you get heaven with him. What's this resurrection bit? Now, the Bible teaches that if you die as someone who's in relationship with Jesus, yes, you will go to be with him in heaven. But the message of the Bible, the good news of the Bible, is so much more than that, and so much more powerful, so much more hope-giving. It is that these very bodies that we have belong to Jesus, and he died and he came to life again so that these very bodies will live. Hang on, how's that going to happen? What's this resurrection bit? So today I have the best job in the world. I get to talk about your body coming back to life again. And you have the second best job in the world. You get to hear me. Isn't that great? But we all have this great opportunity, even if I'm terrible at it today, to take a few moments and build our future, not on speculation. and not on superstition, on what might happen to you after you die, but we can have a rock-solid, evidence-based hope that not even death can take away. That Jesus promises that he will take the very dust of your body and he will remake it like his. Will we trust him today to do that? So today, we're going to spend a few moments on the first day after a full real snow. A week after we just went into the deepest, darkest days of the year. We're going to talk a little bit about death. A lot about hope and victory and overcoming death, and a little bit about how we experience the beauty and the power about the man from heaven. So we're going to be reading from 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 35 through 49, and no, you're not confused. This isn't Easter time, even though this is more of a traditional Easter passage. We're talking about the resurrection of Jesus, and it's a great time to be doing it right now. As you're turning in your own Bibles or as you're preparing to read here, just want to remind you that the author of this letter, 1 Corinthians, the author of this letter was an eyewitness. He was an eyewitness to the resurrected Jesus. He knew that the body of Jesus that went into the ground is the body that came out of the ground transformed. He was one of many who saw Jesus alive after being really dead. And he's a great witness to teach us about what is to come so that you and I can build our lives on what is true, not on speculation and not on superstition, about what's going to happen when Jesus returns, even to these bodies that waste away. So Paul says, verse 35, but someone will ask, how are the dead raised? With what kind of body do they come? That's a great question. Paul, you foolish person. What you sow does not come to life unless it dies. And what you sow is not the body that is to be, but a bare kernel, perhaps of wheat or of some other grain. But God gives it a body as he has chosen, and to each kind of seed its own body. For not all flesh is the same. But there is one kind for humans, another for animals, another for birds, and another for fish. And there are heavenly bodies and there are earthly bodies. But the glory of the heavenly is of one kind and the glory of the earthly is another. There is one glory of the sun and another glory of the moon and the other glory of the stars. For star differs in star in glory. So it is with the resurrection of the dead. What is sown is perishable. What is raised is imperishable. It's sown in dishonor. It's raised in glory. It's sown in weakness. It's raised in power. It's sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. If there's a natural body, then there's also a spiritual body. Thus it is written, quoting from Genesis. The first man, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. But it's not the spiritual that is first, but the natural and then the spiritual. The first man was from the earth, a man of dust. The second man is from heaven. As was the man of dust, so are all those who are of the dust. As is the man of heaven, so also are those who are of heaven. Just as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the man of heaven. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now, a little over a month and a half ago, my family and I had the honor and the privilege of moving my mother-in-law into an assisted living facility in Big Lake, Minnesota, or Ham Lake, Minnesota. I can't remember. It's a month and a half ago. Hi, Karen. I hope you're watching from your apartment right now. It's good to have you joining with us online. Seriously. But we had this opportunity to move her from an apartment into an assisted care living facility, and we are still, my wife and I are still amazed by how many people who didn't know my mother-in-law, they just knew us, volunteered their time for a whole day on a Friday to help move her. People, friends from Faith Community Church, and so just thank you again for those of you who are involved. Those of you who didn't sign up, I'm sorry, you missed a great day. No, but... anyway, I'm just super grateful. Now, as we, one of the people that's helping with us, his name is Glenn. He brought the first load of, he was one of the ones to bring the first load into the new living facility. And Glenn came out after bringing in that first load. And he came out and I was in the truck and I was getting things ready and he just looked at me. And he said sort of under his breath, a little bit embarrassed, but also a little truthful and also a little joking. He said, "I am not getting old." And of course, me being the comforting, kind, encouraging friend that I am, I looked at him square in the eye and said, "Glenn, you are old." And he got mad at me and he almost like threw a kidding punch at me. I'm like, "Well, you're old, you're not gonna hurt me, it's not a big deal." But so he's like, but he's only like in his mid-50s, right? Only in the mid-50s, I'm 49, he's old, I'm not yet fully. Because many of you are looking at me like, "You're a young pup, man. You have no idea what's coming." Now, I bring all that up is that there is this sense in which when we go into assisted care facilities, even when there's independent living there, when there's assisted care there, we are in some ways a bit afraid and uncomfortable to be there. Why? Because we see where we are headed. And we don't like it. We don't like it, and we're not supposed to. Now, I want to talk a little bit about death and what's going to happen to you. Because the Bible is realistic about what's going to happen to us, and I want to do that so that we know that as the Bible is realistic and talking about what's going to happen to us in our physical form, it is just as and even more realistic about what's going to happen to us when Jesus returns and what he's going to do to our bodies. Another reason why I want to do this is because we sort of have sidelined death. This is a strange question I know to answer. You don't have to shout out loud, just raise your hand if you would. How many of you have been in the same room when someone died? Right. How many of you have touched a dead body? Okay. Now, what's fascinating about our culture and scary about our culture is that we see on movies and TV shows far more death than any of our ancestors did. But we have actually less personal experience with death than our ancestors did. It used to be that people would die at home. That's a rare occurrence today. And so we need to think about what's going to happen to you and me. If we live long enough, we're going to die. And the Bible has some ways of talking about it because the Bible is very acquainted with death and sees it as an enemy that must be overcome, not to be something to be made peace with. Now, the Apostle Paul talks about our enemy and what death does to us by using four words in this passage. He says, "What is sown is perishable. It is sown in dishonor. It is sown in weakness. It is sown a natural body." Now, we're going to come back to that sowing language, but just a few comments about how the Bible treats death and why it sees it as an enemy. First, death makes us perishable. This is the nature of our bodies. Every one of us has a use-by date on us. We're perishable. We're going to get weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. Now, my dad was a protector in a sense, and sort of an emotional protector. He wanted to shield us from worry and over concern. And so at times he wouldn't tell us all the different things that were going on in his body. So I had to go do a little few end arounds here and there just to understand. And about a year before my dad died, I called up a friend who works in hospice care. I said, "This is what we're seeing with my dad. Your best guess, I'm not looking for, you know, a prediction, just your best guess, how long does he have and what do we have to experience?" I said, Not sure how long he has, but this is what you'll start to find. He'll start to go into the hospital more and more. And when he goes into the hospital, they'll release him, not at the stage where he was better. They'll just release him to a stage where he's now functional and can live outside of the hospital without their care. And every time he goes in the hospital and he's released, he's going to be degraded more and more and more. And that's exactly what happened. Why? Because we're perishable. Eventually, you start going into the hospital, and when you come back out, you're not normal. And where you used to be, you've got a whole new normal that you're living at because we're perishable. We're sown, Paul says, in dishonor. Now, as much as we want to try to show honor to one another, there is a lack of dignity in growing old. Now, we younger people like to make fun of it a little bit, there's diapers for older people. But just think about that. Your biology starts to shut down. Can't control your bladder as much anymore, and so you have to discreetly wear undergarments that would protect you and also make it seem like you're not wearing a diaper at the same time. There's a dishonor in growing old. It's hard. It's difficult. One of the greatest privileges I had when I was beginning to learn to be a pastor and to preach is that I would go to a Christian community home once every other month, and I would preach a sermon to people who could very barely hear me, preach a sermon to them, and then give them communion. It was a privilege, but it was so humbling at the same time where I remember there was an aide who would always come with me, and we'd have these little wafers, and I would dip the wafer, this is long before COVID, I can't do this now, but I dipped the wafer into wine, and then the aide would say, Alice, and Alice would be laying in the back and just barely conscious. Stick out your tongue. And I would place the wafer on her tongue. Okay, Alice, close your mouth now. And the wafer would just dissolve on her tongue. This woman used to dance. This woman used to laugh. This woman used to cook food and be productive, and now she can barely get her tongue out to take communion. There's a dishonor in growing old and dying that we can't stop. There's a weakness as well. Those of you who have been around Faith Community for some time, you know that I've lost about 50 pounds in the last year and a half or something like that. But during this time of I've been trying to lose weight, I've also lost muscle mass. Unfortunately, I can't do both at the same time. And my sons have taken up powerlifting. They all are. My 14-year-old son is now stronger than I am. It's pathetic in a sense, but I'm trying to do strength right now for a whole new season of life. They're like in the prime. They've got testosterone going through. They're eating whatever they want, whenever they want, however much they want. And then they go lift, and they get big and strong. I go in, I'm like, I'm barely just even trying to hang on anymore. Why? Because as much as I possibly can, even though I'm still doing powerlifting, I'm weaker. And I'm not going to get stronger again the way I was. My body is growing weak. Your body is going to get weaker. I don't know how it's going to happen to you, but you will find yourself more and more weaker and unable to control your body. And have the strength that you used to have, the vitality that you used to have. The last time I saw my mom alive, she had a disease called Huntington's chorea. The last time I saw her alive, she was in a nursing home. She was in a webbed cage because of the tremors and the involuntary movement. She could jump out of bed and hurt herself. She was in a webbed cage. She couldn't talk anymore. She was, in one sense, delighted to see me, but she couldn't talk anymore. All she could do was shriek. She was so weak. She looked like a Holocaust survivor. Catheter, feeding tube. Weak. You will experience something like that. No matter what kind of death you have, you are going to get weaker. And lastly, Paul says that our bodies are natural. They're natural. In other words, we're made of this stuff, of this world that is decomposing, that is falling apart, that can't hold together. And we're made of it. We're made of the dust, and to the dust we shall return. And there's nothing that you and I can do about it on our own. On our own. Now, this is how the Bible portrays us. So I just want you to know that we have a realistic picture from the Bible about what's going to happen to you and me, and what is our enemy and what he does to us, and the power that he has to destroy us. And because of that, a big question comes. How is it that God can take this body that's going to experience weakness and dishonor and remake it? Now, that was a question back the ancients had to struggle with too. So just so you know, the whole message of Jesus and the resurrection was a foreign concept in the ancient world. The ancient Greeks, they didn't like the body. When they heard about the resurrection of the body, like, what? That's disgusting, a bunch of zombies walking around? Because they prized the spirit. They didn't prize the physical. And so Paul had to sort of jump over backwards or do everything he possibly could to try to help them understand the power and the strength and the this outlandish and audacious promise that Jesus has that these very bodies are going to come back to life and live with beauty, not dishonor. Now they diminish the body and prize the spirit. For us today, it's hard for us to wrap our minds around resurrection as well and to really believe and let the power of it start to rest in our hearts for two reasons. One, in general, our culture still has a kind of Christian belief in the afterlife where we just simply have this sense of when you die, you go to a better place. I mean, how many times have you been to a funeral and maybe heard somebody say, well, at least they're not in pain anymore now? Or, hey, you know, they're looking down from us from the sky. You know, they're in the big golf course in heaven, right? Whatever your hobby might be, that's what heaven starts to look like. How do we know that? It's pure speculation. There are people in this room listening to me. You've got this sense of you're going to just die and go to a better place someday. How do you know that? You don't. We also flip to the other side in our culture where we just basically look at death as just a natural part of the world. It's just the way it is. When you die, there's nothing left afterward. You're just going to die. You just cease to exist. There is no spirituality. There's just material, and it's going to decompose, and you're just food for worms. Circle of life. One of the most depressing songs Disney's ever come up with. But still, you got to ask the question, how do you know there is no life after death? That's pure speculation. No one's been to the other side and come back to tell us what it's like, except for one. And he's the one that saves us. So I want you to know that as we move on and we talk about our future, we're supposed to use our imaginations a little bit, but this is not speculation. This is based on what God really did in human history with a human being named Jesus, that this real Jesus, he really lived, he really died, he really ran into the ground, and he really came back to life, and he really says that he has the power to do the same to you if you follow him. If you're not following him, please, if you want to know more about how to follow him, please hit the next steps button. Talk to me right after the service. This is about life or death, yours. So important. Now, if Jesus really does have the power to make us alive and to put us back together again, what's that going to be like? I'm going to spend the rest of our time on this. Paul, in this section, gives some reasons or some ways of thinking about it. Again, you got to remember that the Apostle Paul saw Jesus alive. He saw the glorious Jesus. He saw him transformed. And he's trying to help us understand, as a faithful witness to what he saw and who Jesus is, help us understand so we can build our hope on something that isn't speculative, that's true to who God is and what's going to happen. And the Apostle Paul is going to dig in a little bit to how God created this world and how he designed it. See, God intentionally designed this world in certain ways to teach us about what life is going to be like when Jesus returns and the dead are raised. And Paul looks at agriculture first. He says, and what you sow is not the body that is to be, verse 37, but a bare kernel, perhaps of wheat or some other grain. But God gives it a body as he has chosen, and to each kind of seed its own body. Now, I am not a farmer like Tim Prince is a farmer. And last week he was talking about, if you were here, the first fruits of eating sweet corn, that first bite of sweet corn in the summer, and you've got all this summer of sweet corn to look ahead to. Now, he's a farmer. I'm like a gardener, sorta. We've got a big garden, and my wife makes the most amazing tomato marinara sauce in the world. I love it. It's pure gold in our house. But we garden. And one of the most fascinating things to do, for me at least, is to look at a little beet seed. It's the ugliest little thing in the world. It's brown, it's wrinkled, it looks like grape nuts. How many of you are grape nuts eaters? Right? Okay, so you guys are the old people, okay? My grandparents used to give me grape nuts as a kid. I'm like, what is this? This is terrible, it's breaking my teeth, right? You're paying for the dental bills. But anyway, I mean, that's what a beet seed looks like. This little grape nut thing, it's terrible. It's ugly. There's no life in it whatsoever. It's this disgusting little thing. And you put it in the ground, and you wait weeks and weeks and weeks. And what comes out? This most beautiful vegetable. The leaves are brilliant green with purple. And then the beet itself is this purplish red color that will dye your fingers, right? It's beautiful. Now, if you looked at that seed and you just put it in the ground and you never knew that you put that seed in the ground and you saw this beet, you'd be like, what? No way. Those two things are not together. And Paul says, that's by design. The seeds, every seed that's put into the ground is weak, ugly, no beauty to it whatsoever, tiny, small. We bury it. And God does a miracle in the soil. And so what he's saying is that your body is just like the seed. It's going to be put into the ground, no matter how it might be, through cremation or through just burial. You're going to go to dust. But don't let what you see put into the ground limit your imagination to what you will be like. You are a plant. And you're going to come out the other side absolutely beautiful. The same seed that's put in the ground is the same seed that produces the fruit and the leaves and the plant. That's you and me. This is one of the reasons, I don't know if you've ever wondered about this. Like, I always found it weird. Like, why is it that everybody had a hard time recognizing Jesus when he was raised from the dead? You ever wonder that? Like, why is, like, you're walking with him, like Mary. Mary's in the garden. She's having a conversation with Jesus. She doesn't recognize Jesus until Jesus says her name, Mary, in the way that only Jesus can say it. But she's having a conversation. She spent years with Jesus. Can't recognize him. Why? Because she knew him as a seed. Now she sees him as a plant. See, this is the amazing thing about what Jesus says that he can do for you and me. It's something that he went through as well. Death used to be an executioner. But Jesus has just made him a gardener. Your very body will live. And I can't wait to see what you're going to be like. Paul says as well, not only does he look at the agriculture, the plant kingdom, if you can call it that, he also looks at animals. He says, look, I know that this might be hard for you to imagine that your body's going to be put in the ground in weakness and dishonor, but then it's going to come out with power. You need to understand that God is in the business of doing these kinds of things. Consider his power and what he's able to do. He says, verse 39, look at the animal kingdom. For not all flesh is the same, but there is one kind for humans, another for animals, another for birds, another for fish. You ever considered that? The beautiful power and variety of God. He can make humans who don't have a lot of hair, some of us less than others. Gives us skin with very little hair because of the world that we inhabit. He gives the animals skin with a lot more hair because of the world that they inhabit. He gives to birds feathers because of the world that they inhabit. He gives to fish scales because of the world that they inhabit. And he says, he can do the same with you. A world is coming where this whole cosmos gets remade. It's going to be recreated, a brand new creation, and you're going to need a new body. And just as he makes fish for swimming, he's going to remake you for the world to come. And you're going to be beautiful, absolutely stunning. And you will never experience weakness again, or ugliness again, or death again, as we just sang, where death is just a memory. Barely a memory. And lastly, not only does he want us to look at the animals, he wants us to look at the heavenly bodies and the earthly body. In other words, the heavenly worlds and our world. It says there are heavenly bodies and earthly bodies, but the glory of the heavenly is of one kind, and the glory of the earthly is of another. There is one glory of the sun and another glory of the moon, another glory of the stars, for star differs from star in glory. God made it this way intentionally to teach us something about what is to come. He made the first creation to point to the next creation to come. When we look at this world, we are amazed at what God can do. When we look at the sun and the moon, we see the different glory. We see the different glory of the different stars. And what Paul says is, and what the scriptures teach, and what creation is trying to announce to us, is that you have a certain kind of beauty and glory as a human being right here, right now, but it's weak. You have no idea the type of beauty that you're going to have when you are resurrected. You can get a glimpse of it by looking at the stars and the sun and the moon. Right now, you are moons. One day, you're going to be stars, light bearers of your own. Brilliant. Bruce Springsteen, I'll date myself, sang a song, I think in the late 80s, early 90s, Glory Days. Glory days, they'll pass you by, glory days. The wink of a young girl's eye, glory days. Keep talking about the glory days of the past. Glory is still to come. Those are the glory days. The greatest glory you've ever experienced in this life is just a glimpse of heaven. The glory is still to come. Still to come. Now, please, I need to connect one more dot here as I close. Just need to let you know that this is what Jesus promises to us who belong to him. This is not the default condition of the human race. The default condition of the human race is to live and then die and then to experience hell. And hell is a lot more like the Walking Dead than anything that you've been maybe imagined or joked about hell being like. That's a bodily existence too. But there's no glory. There's no imperishability. It's hell. Physical hell that goes forever with no relief. The way to experience glory, The way to experience the kind of life, not only in this life, but in the life to come, comes with the good news of Jesus. This is why we are so determined to share Jesus with everybody, because this is the way forward, and this is the only way that you and I can experience release from our enemy. Again, if you don't know Jesus, please talk to me. I would love to help you know more about Jesus and follow him. If you do know Jesus, look at the stars, look at the sky, look at the animals, look at the plants when they come back up. That's you. That's what God's going to do in you. Again, just to date me a little bit, 1984, The Terminator was released. Remember that, the first one? Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'll be back. And that movie had a powerful storyline to it because if you don't know the storyline, the future machines sent a cyborg back into the past to try to kill Sarah Connor because her son was going to be the one who undid and overcame the machines. Sarah Connor has no idea that this thing that came to get her and is hunting her, and she gets a glimpse in this powerful, grotesque, and violent scene of just what this Terminator can do. Nothing stops him. He's not afraid of anything. Police, nothing. Nothing stops him at all. And she's terrified because she knows that this thing's come to get her. But the resistance from the future sends back this guy named Kyle Reese, and he knows what's going on with Terminators, and he knows what to do with them. And Kyle Reese looks at Sarah Connor in one scene and just looks at her and just says, "Come with me if you want to live." That's the gospel. We have a foreign invader in our creation. It's called death. And there's nothing that we can do to stop him. He's way too powerful for us. But Paul says in this verse, or in these verses, "As with the man of dust, so also are those of the dust. As with the man of heaven, so also the man of heaven." We have a man from heaven who has come to get us. And this is what he says. "Come with me if you want to live. Come with me if you want to live." And the promise, no matter how weak, no matter how dishonored we get, he's able to take us and transform us. And because God himself in human form not only lived again, he died, he's uniquely able right here, right now, no matter what kind of experience death we have, to personally minister to us, to help us to persevere until the day that we see him face to face. Jesus says, "Come with me if you want to live." Now, we're going to celebrate communion together. Communion is a time where we take and we eat piece of bread or a wafer. And Jesus says, "This is my body given for you." And we drink a cup of juice or wine. And remember, Jesus' blood spilled for us. He died in our place so that we could live and live like him. So we're going to do that today. We're going to sing a little bit about Jesus and his power to remind our hearts. We're going to sing a little bit, and then I'm going to come back up and lead us through communion. And this is what I want to ask you to do, that if you don't have communion and you're in the room, we've still got tables out there. You can get your communion packet while we sing this first song before we take communion together, because we want to do it together, okay? If you already have your communion packet, sing along with us and start to worship Jesus because of his power and his goodness and his love and what he's going to do with us and for us. Let me pray, then we'll start to sing a little bit. Father, thank you for your grace and your mercy. I ask, God, that you would help us to worship Jesus, to build our confidence on our future in hope with what you have done, Jesus. Move us from speculation and superstition about the future and help us to be rock solid in what you're going to do. Because you love us. You loved us so much. that you live for us, you died for us, you rose again for us, and you are coming again. And we celebrate communion until the day that you come. Thank you.